The main thing that has gotten me through, honestly, is being myself and being true to myself. And it sounds so cliche, but it's really true. And it can, and honestly, it can be really hard to do as well. But I noticed that when I lean into who LaTanya is and what interests me, so many innovations come out of that. Whether it's my love for sport and basketball, whether it's my love for pop culture and the Flash, like all those things have led me like to complete a dissertation or to create a whole Instagram dedicated to first generation students and pop culture, just because I leaned into the things that make me me. And so I just want to like remind people the importance of that, of really sort of getting to know yourself, embracing who you are, and you said it before, taking a risk and following it, because it's gonna take you some to unimaginable places.
Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Janine Ledford, your host and the creator of the groundbreaking concept of intercultural creativity, which is the intersection of creative thinking and cultural competence. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. We have exciting guests in all types of fields who highlight how creative thinking best thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. I'm so excited to be back with you with yet again another wonderful, amazing thought leader guest. This one happens to be very close to my heart, someone who helped me grow in my intercultural creative journey. I am excited to introduce to you my very first college professor in 1997 at UCLA. Let me tell you a little bit about her and then we will jump right in. Dr. LaTanya L.T. Rees-Miles is a partner and director of Scale and Support at Career Launch and is an adjunct professor in the Department of Educational Leadership at Santa Clara University. A first generation college graduate herself, Dr. LT, has established two successful programs for first generation college students. One at my alma mater, UCLA, and the other at Loyola Marymount University, both recognized as first gen forward institutions. She regularly consults with institutions nationally concerning first generation students and also has advised local high schools about developing their programs on campus. Finally, she's established and manages a national Facebook group, Empowering First Generation Students, and is the chief strategist for the First Gen and Juice brand. I am so excited to welcome her to the Create and Grow podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Janine. It's always a pleasure and an honor to talk with you.
Yeah, so you met me in 1997. You were pregnant with, I believe, your first child at the time, who has grown, right, and gone off doing his amazing thing. And you've had another child since then. And they're both just beautiful children. And you've done some great work since you met me as a young, not even a freshman. I was coming in to my freshman year at UCLA. And I've seen you do amazing things and vice versa. Just lets the audience get to know a little bit more about who you are, and then we'll just jump into your expertise on the first gen experience. And when I say first gen to my audience, I mean first generation students, and I'll just have you define that as well.
Sure. Let's go back to 1997. So I would have been in my second year of my doctoral program at that time at UCLA, getting a PhD in English. Super, super excited to teach initially. And that's important because as a first generation college student myself, now in a PhD program, 3,000 miles away from my family, which is back on the East Coast, I had these moments early on in that program where I didn't feel comfortable, right? I come from a working class background. And there I was at UCLA in an English department, and feeling a little bit out of place. But where I always felt comfortable and always felt confident was in the classroom, engaging with students like you. And it always just reminded me of my why, right? My purpose. And I really wanted to give back. And the definition of first generation college that I tend to operate from are students whose parents or caregivers have not completed a four-year degree in the United States. And so that actually is a little broader definition, but it also is more inclusive because there are many folks whose parents may have received a degree or a certificate outside of the US, but that didn't translate into like their social or cultural capital here.
Yes, I do find that I've seen that happen quite a few times where a lot of the parents may have to start from scratch or wasn't recognized. So there's a lot of conversation there. Wonderful, wonderful. And so as far as the UCLA Pro program, I remember you talking about a story. And we're all about perspective shifting with the 7 gems of intercultural creativity. One of the gems are increasing your ability to perspective shift. And one story you shared that stayed with me was a first generation student, you know, having to take the bus to move-in day for freshman day. And she was walking up Bruin Walk with all of her stuff. And I remember my move-in day, my mom dropping myself off and my twin off at UCI, and my family was there. And that just really put me in a position to really juxtapose our experiences. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't sure which story you were referring to, but yes, I remember that one very clearly. And here's why it's important, because this isn't to say, oh, boo-hoo, first-generation college students, right, have it rough. That's not the narrative, right? But what can happen is if you don't come from a college-going family, for example, you just might not know what the expectations are. Like, so for those of us who've been, and then we bring our children along, it tends to be like a familial thing, right? Like people get dropped off, your family comes. Well, if you don't know what to expect, then sometimes the family doesn't come, right? They may think, oh, this is just a continuation of you going to high school, right? I didn't drop you off when you went to high school. And so the expectations just may not be clear. Right. So if we want or expect families to come and drop off their student, then our colleges and universities need to say that and be explicit, and also create environments where parents and family members also feel welcome and supported. So sometimes family members can't make it. We get that. So in that instance, then we want to make sure that those students get extra love and support when they do come. And that was, you mentioned a perspective shift in the office that I was working for, which was first year experience, where I said, we've got to be mindful of these students. We have to look out for them.
Mm-hmm. And what are some other areas, especially at UCLA, I love my school, but some other areas that you saw growth in during your time of building, because you were building that program?
Wow. You know, it's so funny that this is really good for your community to be thoughtful of as you're talking about cultural competence and creativity, is that many of these shifts are not overnight, right? And so you have to have a level of patience. I remember first talking about first generation or this concept of first to go way back in 2008, and it was just a workshop at that time, and it didn't really develop a lot of traction, right? And so it took me leaving UCLA, coming back in 2016 for it to pick back up again, right? And so it's been a whole range of things, first from just letting people know what's the definition and why is it important? Why does it matter in this case at UCLA, which is a research institution? And not everybody knows what a research institution is, right? So having to explain that. And then once that started, once we moved past the like awareness stage, we were able to get into some of the more refined aspects of the first generation experience and start looking at, for example, what does it mean to be first gen in the School of Engineering? What does it mean to be where like that major is a lot more concrete and applied versus first generation in the humanities, where your parents may say, what are you going to do with that degree, right? And so my conversation certainly shifted over a period of time. Started with really, really big picture and got very granular over years, I just want to say.
Oh, that's awesome. I remember visiting you at UCLA before you made this last career move.
I still have that picture.
Love it. Yeah, we have to make sure we get one at least once a decade, right?
A decade.
And I believe it was in the building of the mayor, right? The former mayor of Los Angeles.
Oh, Bradley. Bradley, yes, yeah. Yes.
And he has his own terminal at LAX too and everything. Yep. But it just give me the experience of a first year coming to college, because like you said, it is a perspective shift. And for some, just a really quick story, my mom, you know, because my mom did go to UCI. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, this is the one time I was sad that she didn't, because I wanted to be a first year so I can work with you, right? Mom, Dad, but anyway, I am blessed that they
very proud. Be proud of that.
Yes, yes. And they set my siblings and I up very well. And I always talk about capital and privilege. And it took me a while to say, wait, that's a privilege that I have, that I had a mother who knew the educational system, K-12 and college, that some of my peers didn't. And it really shifted my perspective, and now put me in a place to help my other students who may not have that benefit. But there was one quick story of my mother who got into UCI, and she's a first gen student, and her mother, my grandmother, went and bought her like a plaid skirt and high white socks and everything. And so my mother wore that to UCI. She gets the class and she's like, wait, everyone's in jeans and t-shirts. And my grandmother was like, I'm sorry, that's what I saw on TV. You know, and so like, so that's where she got her information. That's how people dress when they go to college. And so just thinking about, do you have a few of those stories where, ooh, you know, you had to just kind of sit down with someone and like,
I have so much to say in response. First of all, it's amazing and fantastic that you and your sister had that privilege, right? We shouldn't be ashamed of that privilege whatsoever. I like to use, you mentioned my two, I like to use them as an example quite a bit, right? Because they had a very unusual childhood, right? As the children of a faculty member at UCLA living on campus. Like, they had the opposite of what I had. Here I was growing up with very little college experience, and I was a faculty and resident, and my two children, Jabari and Zoe, were like 4 and 8 years old when we moved on campus and lived there as part of the community, right? And so imagine the levels of privilege that they have, and they were right there on a college campus. And so that's one extreme. The other extreme is if you don't have any, right? And so one of the things you were describing as you were talking about your mom's experience is just what I call the hidden curriculum. What is it that, you know, you're expected to know, but people don't teach it to you directly? And it could be something as simple as, you know, what do you wear to college? What do you bring for move-in? All the way to things like, well, what do you major in? And how do you go about finding internships? When do you drop a class? It's so many different components that people sometimes forget about. And so here's how it can tie to creativity, because again, this isn't a sad story. This shouldn't be about, oh, these poor students, right? What can happen when you don't have all the rules is that it can actually free up your imagination, right? Then you can start to write your own rules. That's the way that I look at it, is once you sort of understand the landscape, sometimes you can see things in a different way. And first generation students bring a lot of gifts to our campuses. And that's what we need to focus on. I think of my student, Chris from Loyola Marymount University, and where I worked, and at LMU, they had a lot of like theme weeks, Janine, like domestic violence awareness or immigration awareness. And so Chris came to my office one day and he was like, why isn't there first gen awareness? And I was like, I don't know, Chris, right? And so now LMU has one of the oldest first generation awareness weeks in the country, all because of an idea that a student had, right? He wanted to have swag. He saw like fraternities and sororities and how they had like jackets and t-shirts. And he's like, why can't we have our own stuff? And we're like, okay. And then we created like first generation t-shirts, right? And so those are the things that we want to focus on, are what sparks that creativity, that new perspective that students bring to our institutions.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, some of my work is in the neuroscience aspect of cultural competence and creative thinking. And we look at in and out groups, you know, how the brain separates in groups and out groups, and that we actually use different neural circuits for who we classify as in group and out group. It's really some fascinating work. Dr. Daniel Siegel out of UCLA, Dr. David Eagleman out of Stanford, and a few others. But really, you know, pretty sure you've been along the research of belonging, right? And what right. happens to the psyche and the identity when you actually feel like you belong to a group. And so what a great way for the student to use his creative thinking and his risk-taking and his initiative Ooh. To create even more of an aspect of a belonging on campus where you can actually see this, because there's no like sign on someone's forehead that says, you know,
I'm first year. Yeah.
And one thing, do you remember in 2017 where there was that the college scam where it was shown that a few parents were paying writing checks to give their kids into the back door? And I remember having an alumni 360 meeting. That's my nonprofit where the students from my elementary school, we meet once a week. We have speakers come, financial aid, life skills training, and things like that. And we saw that together. And I just wanted to see what their thoughts were. And we talked about resilience and how our, because most like probably 99.9% of my students coming from Canoga Park are going to be first gen students if they decide to go the four-year or two-year route. But I just wanted them to perspective shift and just learn or see how their life has built certain skills or muscles. Do you talk about that with your students?
Yeah, what you're describing is basically a strength-based approach, right? This notion that all students have capital, right? And they come with a form of capital. It's just that not all forms of capital are validated or affirmed or valued. So we have to acknowledge the great work of Tara Yasso, who talks about like community cultural wealth, for example. And so oftentimes students it's not their fault. We all need to do better at affirming the types of experiences that all students can bring to a campus. You talked about like resilience being one of them. Sometimes we overlook the importance of being bilingual or multilingual, right? That's amazing. Some students have to take care of, often first generation or low income, are taking care of younger siblings or other family members. And where do you put that on LinkedIn? Like, where do you put that on your resume? You know, juggling a lot of responsibilities, being a cultural broker or translator for your family. That was my role. And I come from an English speaking, non-immigrant background, but the role that I played in my family as being like the first for so many things meant that I had to explain a lot of things to my grandmother and to my cousins, right? That's a lot of strong skill sets. I think you would agree, right? But where, how do we talk about that? How can we like in career centers, like tease that out of a student and pull that out and say, hey, this is amazing. You didn't have to just work, you know, at a law firm or something like that in order to have valuable experience. So those are the important things that we need to be thinking about.
Yes, I love that. I love that. You know, because going back to that student scandal, the college scandal, a lot of people were focused on the parents, especially those few high profile parents. I believe some were in Hollywood. But I said, you know, I'm looking at the students. What a form of child abuse to rob my seriously, when you think about it, robbing them of going through the experience of going for it on their own merit if they didn't get in, of how do you pick yourself back up and go for number two, number three, you know, just all of the life experiences of falling down and getting back up and still working on your identity. I'm still a valuable person. Let's keep moving. Like that life capital, right, is huge. And then I have a activity that I do with corporations now. I call it the diamond shaped life. And you know, my logo is a diamond because shining bright like a diamond, right? And we can talk a lot about by metaphors. And I have to send you. Did I send you some diamond?
No, swag? I don't have that. I have the book around here somewhere. Yeah.
I also have the huge, huge diamond as
well. Oh my gosh, you're amazing.
But the one thing that I wanted to bring, to connect that with what you just said, is I have people kind of list their job descriptions in the crown of the diamond. You know, this is really what people think. Hey, I'm the accountant. I do this, and this, and this, and this. But in the pavilion of the diamond makes me think of our basketball center, right? The pavilion is what I have them list, like their hobbies, their talents, their, you know, the things they love to do that you're not getting paid for. And then I have them look at it in a metaphorical way. So my example is I love to karaoke sing. You know, I don't know if you remember, but you gave us an assignment in 1997 to choose a song and then do something with the song. I chose a Mariah Carey song. I've never forgotten that. Yes.
I don't even remember that.
I still remember the actual song and everything. But to look at it past the surface and say, okay, you love to garden. That means you're very observant. It's hard to keep plants alive. You need to be sensitive to how they're speaking to you. And then other people, one was poetry, just like everyone had these skills that no one knew, because you don't come to work saying, oh, I love poetry. You know, it's like, no, I'm the accountant. Let me do my job. And so what you're talking about is making these hidden competencies come to surface, and then having the students. And we can talk more about this off camera too, but if you want this assignment, I can totally share it with you. But it's eye opening to exactly what you just said. And I can also send you the research on bilingualism. I'm doing a lot of research in the neuroscience behind why the arts are a critical aspect of human development. And Dr. Nina Kraus out of Northwestern University has really deep research on, you know, the brainstem and other auditory factors that are increased because of music exposure, but she also brings in bilingualism as well. And people who are bilingual have more phonemes intact. They're able to hear speech better with noise. And this is a critical thing when you get older and your speech and your hearing starts to deteriorate. People who have these strong assets, you know, are just better positioned. And so there's so much there, the cultural broker, I love that term. There's so much there that we want to open our students to, that they're carrying around all these diamonds that they're not even cognizant of.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that assignment. You're definitely going to have to send that to me.
Yes. Yes. And like I said, if you ever need me to pop in a class, I'm there for you. Like you taught me 3 years. How long ago? 25 years ago?
Well, Jabari was born in 97 and he'll be 25 this year.
Yeah.
He'll be 25.
And I entered the program, the freshman summer program. And so that, I don't know if that was for students of color or students from a different particular background.
The summer program was students of color, first generation, or students whose high schools have not historically sent students to UCLA. So it's a variety of factors.
Yes, yes. And that was just a wonderful bridge. And I love that. And, you know, what is your thinking or your thoughts on the conversation of a four-year degree? Like when our parents when my mom was going to school, or our parents' generation, like if you had a four-year degree, that was it, you were set, you know, like, you know. But now it's the conversation is kind of changing. What are your thoughts about
that? I see so many things happening. I see one pathway I see are people not completing four-year degrees, because, you know, now I'm in Silicon Valley, right? I'm not in LA anymore. And there's so many entrepreneurs right now, right, without degrees. Mark Zuckerberg didn't complete his degree at Harvard. But we also have to keep in mind that folks like that tend to also have a lot of other kinds of capital or forms of support that allows them not to do that. And then, so that's one doorway. Another doorway is that you're seeing folks really needing above and beyond a four-year degree in order to really make some breakthroughs. In other words, going on for an advanced degree, whether it's a master's or MBA or something like that. I tend to advise students to think about what's best for them and try not to compare themselves to other people. Mm-hmm. Find your squad, your trusted group, your own personal board of advisors who know you well and know your skill sets in order to help make some informed decisions, right? Because sometimes I've also heard, again, from folks who aren't coming from college going backgrounds, like, oh, I want a PhD because it's the highest degree in the land. That's a terrible reason to go to get a PhD.
So I can say doctor.
Doctor, so somebody call me doctor. That's terrible, right? You probably
want to say if you worked hard for it, that's why I put doctor in front of your name.
Oh, yes,
you worked hard for that. So I'm going to put on there.
Yes, I appreciate that. But it also means that you need to understand what it is that you're getting into, right? And so making sure people make informed decisions. You know what, I wrote this down, maybe we could talk about it a little bit more, but a lot of our decisions are influenced by popular culture and representation. And that's a area, as you know, that I'm very invested in. But, you know, we see things on TV and we see lawyers, and there was a period of time, it was after your generation though, where everyone wanted to be a CSI, right? It's because of the TV shows.
Right? I actually looked at that data, and I may have included it in the book about how there was an uptick of people signing up for those majors after that show came out.
After the show,
In women as well, because I think one of the lead characters was a woman.
Yep. So we cannot underestimate the great value of media representation.
Yeah, I would definitely love to talk about more about that, because part of my work, and I am toying with getting a doctorate, so I'll let you know if I need a letter of rec.
I got you.
But yeah, cultural competence and what is influencing our decisions that in the background that we're not even knowing about, like so bias, you know, and what does that look like? Do you have anything to say about that as kids are coming into your sphere?
Yeah, well, I was talking, you know, initially I was thinking about like TV shows or movies, but of course there's just social media as a whole and the role of, let's say, Instagram, for example. And I see that, like, let's say with my son, for example, who's like following folks his age, but they're like millionaires or what have you. And I was like, you don't know the whole story of how this 24-year-old is a millionaire. And so, again, going back to reminding people, you also have to take and apply critical thinking skills when you're ingesting social media as well, right? So we just cannot accept it as all fact and accept it without context. So context is really important.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. I just read an essay by Rabbi Warren Goldstein out of South Africa, and he talks about the power of narrative. And how we, you know, like who's creating the narrative, and we're human beings. So our brains are social, right? Our brains are biosocial, and it needs context and narrative as it makes sense of certain experiences. Do you go through that with your students, you know, because they're creating this new narrative at this new campus? Everything is new, you know? So what does that look like?
Well, it's funny now because, and ironic and a little bit sad that I don't work as directly with students like I used to, right? Mm-hmm. Certainly not undergrads. I never thought I'd be at that place, I guess, but I'm very fortunate and blessed to be at a place in my career now where I'm actually working directly with the campus influencers and senior leadership teams, right? So the vice presidents, AVPs or vice provosts, and helping them think through on an institutional level how they need to be, for example, changing the narrative about first generation students. So, but narrative is still important at that level too, even if something as simple as how do you talk about the first generation experience on your campus? Again, are you approaching it like, oh, you know, sad, or, you know, come because you need help? Or are you saying, oh my God, that's amazing, that's awesome, we embrace you, we support, and you're gonna thrive here? Those are two very different stories. that you can tell about first generation students. You mentioned sense of belonging, and you can imagine where are you going to feel a greater sense of belonging at a place where people are either like celebrating you or saying to you like, oh, you need help, I'm going to pat you on your head, right? So that's the type of work that I'm doing now, is working directly with senior leaders so that they can work with their directors and the folks who are immediately touching students, like on the, what do you call that, on the ground floor, on the front line, whatever metaphor you want to use.
Front line, yeah. And back to my earlier point about the discussion of college and where it fits now and other people's lives journey since the landscape has changed. My quote was, 4-year college isn't for everyone, but higher learning is. So whatever route you choose to take, right, you need to be kind of like what you said, critically looking, reflective, mm-hmm, asking questions, getting counsel for the route that's best for you. Mm-hmm. But for me, I just, you know, my time at UCLA was priceless. And not only did, you know, the academics was there, but the growth, like who Janine became when you first met me to when I graduated and then went to Pittsburgh for a year, then came back and then became an educator for 15 years before I left the classroom. Like my 5 years at UCLA, because I was like, I'm not ready to graduate. Let me get I wasn't thinking about the debt, but the time. But, you know, I just, like, I remember going to Catalina with my faith group and seeing Steve Urkel on the UCLA track and field because he went to UCLA. And so did Mayim Bialik, or another actor. And it was just like, I wouldn't trade those years for anything. And so a lot of my students growing up my elementary school students, you know, I made sure to bring them to college just to make sure they knew that this was an option. To see if it's for you, but this should be a part of your discussion.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you about making sure everyone has an option. We know, of course, that everyone, college isn't for everyone. People have different pathways. Okay, we've said that. But sometimes people get cut off before they can even make that informed choice. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference, is making the informed choice. And so letting students know early and often, bringing them to college campuses, exposing them to different pathways, you know. So all of those things are really, really important. And the sad thing is, and I know you know this too, these decisions happen really, really early. It's not like high school, then people are making those decisions. As early as second grade, where in LAUSD, they're like students are testing into gifted and talented programs. Are you kidding me? Like second grade, and once you identified as gifted, it stays with you forever. And what happens if you don't test as gifted? So some of these pathways are shut off very early for certain populations.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast there, because my was tested and so was I, but I didn't test into it. And it does something to your identity. And that's a conversation that we're looking to have as well, of all kids are gifted, and they're like, no one would look at me and just say, you're not gifted. You know, I was just gifted in a different way. And but it does something, especially when you're twins, you know, you're automatically prepared. And then there's that. And so we just need to be careful, because that does play out in how they see themselves, and however they see themselves plays out in their behavior and their ability to take risk and all that, and be creative and fully grow that creative strength.
And how they're treated as well. Like, yes, all of that. It matters. And again, second grade, you're what, 7? You're 7 years old in the second grade.
Yeah, there's so much there, so much there. Well, I know you are busy saving the world. And so I didn't give you a heads up, but before we end our podcast, I do this with all my guests, because my logo is the diamond and we're meant to shine bright. What final gem would you give the world about whatever area?
You mean like just like a little nugget of information?
Yeah, just words of wisdom from the doctor.
You're so funny. The main thing that has gotten me through, honestly, is being myself and being true to myself. And it sounds so cliche, but it's really true. And it can, and honestly, it can be really hard to do as well. But I noticed that when I lean into who LaTanya is and what interests me, so many innovations come out of that. Whether it's my love for sport and basketball, whether it's my love for pop culture and the Flash, like all those things have led me like to complete a dissertation or to create a whole Instagram dedicated to first generation students and pop culture, just because I leaned into the things that make me me. And so I just want to like remind people the importance of that, of really sort of getting to know yourself, embracing who you are, and you said it before, taking a risk and following it, because it's gonna take you into unimaginable places.
Which I am walking that out right now as we speak, and that's the workforce we're heading in. People who know their gifts and their talents and where they shine best. Those are the people who are going to be able to surf through these waves of the unknown, this VUCA environment, right? Volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. Wonderful. Where people wanted to find out about you or hire you to speak about first gen to their universities or their high schools or their organizations and some of your first gen groups, where could they find out about that?
Oh my gosh. You know, I'm one of these people that's all over the place. I can be found on LinkedIn. I have my own website, LaTanyaReeSmiles.com. Another place is the Empowering First Generation College Students Facebook group. And I'm a designated speaker for NASPA's Catalyst Speaker Group or something like that. I'm sure this information will all be provided.
Yes, yes. It'll be in the show notes, as they say, right? Wonderful, wonderful. Well, once again, it's always good to connect with you. Like I told the audience, you were my first, right? My first professor of my entire upper ed career. And I just did a podcast about education and teachers that have changed the trajectory of our lives. So you certainly are one of those. So thank you for your dedication to me, but also to the millions of students out there that you've met and have not even met, but your work is or will impact. You are a shining diamond. So I will certainly get diamonds out to you because you are a gem.
Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much to our audience for joining us on this Create and Grow a podcast. Don't forget, you are interculturally creative, so go out and shine bright today. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtain some amazing gems and are able to see how you are creative and how we are more creative when we work well together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's C-A-F-F-E strategies.com, where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to build a climate of inclusion and innovation. We have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the 7 gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our children's books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones. We thank you again for joining us and remind you to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.